Welcome to Bits About Books, the home for conversations with authors of breakthrough books on sales, marketing, and business. Founders, entrepreneurs, and individual professionals, we all need to keep track of ideas that are helping create our today and tomorrow. Bits About Books will strive to find those books and speak to their authors, go behind the scenes and understand what inspired the authors to write the books that they did and how they went about doing so. Through our conversations, we hope to gain insights that will help us to get the most out of our efforts. I'm your host Shubhanjan Sarkar, founder of PitchLink, the next generation buyer-seller engagement platform, where our mission is to make buying easy. Thank you for your time and for joining us in this session. I have a favor to ask. While you continue to listen to the podcast, please leave a comment or rating at iTunes or wherever else you get your podcasts from. It means a lot to hear from you. Today, we have with us Lisa Magnusson, and we speak with her about her new book, The Top Sales Leader Playbook, How to Win 5X Deals Repeatedly.
How do they do that repeatedly? How do they really bring those components into their sales organization so they can replicate that year after year? And what I found, I actually interviewed 41 sales VPs as part of my research for this book, live interviews one-on-one. And I asked them about their goals, about their challenges, about their proficiency with large account selling, and all the components. And what I learned was is most sales leaders don't have a playbook, a sales leadership playbook. They have a sales playbook for their salespeople to follow, and they want their salespeople to follow that playbook because they understand that if they do, they're going to be more successful, easier to manage, common terminology. You can measure it. But they don't have a sales playbook that would yield all the exact same benefits for the sales leadership team. And so through those 41 interviews, that really shaped my thinking on what this book should be. So it truly is a sales leader playbook. And I wrote the book in exactly the manner that those 41 people told me that they would find valuable.
Lisa Magnusson has walked in the shoes of sales leaders. She was an award-winning sales manager and led the charge as a sales VP for several sales organizations across a variety of geographies, including executive positions with Fortune 50 companies across a broad spectrum of industries, including technology, software, security, healthcare, medical device, insurance, and manufacturing. As a founder of Topline Sales, Lisa has worked with senior sales leaders and their teams to achieve phenomenal results, especially in the area of big account wins. Lisa also founded and facilitated the Sales Executive Mastermind Group for sales VPs in the Pacific Northwest. Recently, she conducted live one-on-one interviews with 41 sales executives, CROs, sales VPs, and directors as part of her research for this book. Lisa is the author of two award-winning books, The Top Seller Advantage, Powerful Strategies to Build Long-Term Executive Relationships, and her latest book, The Top Sales Leader Playbook, How to Win 5X Deals Repeatedly. Now, onto this inspiring and insightful episode with Lisa Magnusson. Lisa, welcome to Bits About Books. I'm so thrilled and happy to have you on the show. Welcome.
Thank you. Thrilled to be on the show.
So let's start at the beginning. You are not new, neither are you new to sales, nor are you a new author. Why did you have the compulsion to write this new book?
Well, I have spent my entire career in sales and sales leadership, and for the past 15 years as a sales consultant. And what compelled me to write this book is that in working with sales leaders and business leaders, I felt like there was this need to sort of codify how those groups organize themselves to go after truly, truly large deals. I call them 5X deals, meaning about five times your average deal size. And so that was really at the core is a desire to sort of codify that so that more people could participate in having a big deal culture.
So would you say then that this book was specifically targeted at enterprise sales with large annual account value?
You know, yes, and but also it can apply to, you know, the mid-market or even small companies. It really is for the leadership team. So the general company leadership team, the sales leadership team, the VP of sales, directors, sales managers, and big account quarterbacks as well. But any size company that has the ability to go after and develop and cultivate and win a big deal, a 5X deal. And the reason why it's important to differentiate is because you have to do different things for those kinds of opportunities. It's not the same as your normal sales process. And that's what the book is about. It's 16 plays that are plays associated with what leaders and account teams and account quarterbacks need to do differently.
So as you were training salespeople, or you're talking to sales organizations and leaders in the sales organization, you sort of saw the need. Either they were not focused on something that they could have achieved, or they were coming and asking you something that, hey Lisa, how do we increase the size of our deal? So where did it lie actually? What triggered this?
Yeah, well, my practice is a little bit different in that I have spent my entire career in the trenches. And even as a consultant, I am in the trenches with my clients. So what that looks like is, yes, I do offer training. I offer, you know, consulting, but I also offer what I call my war room services. And that is aligning with account teams and helping them identify, develop, and close big deals. So I am literally in the trenches with them day in and day out. And so, you know, I'm helping them prepare for finalist presentations. I'm going through that RFP process with them if they have to do that. I'm helping them score their opportunities. I'm helping them identify who should be on the account team and what the roles are. I'm sort of that external expert and facilitator. And in many, many cases, I stay with that account team from the beginning all the way through to the end. So my desire to help kind of put all this in one place was born out of experience with what account teams struggle with, what sales organizations struggle with sort of trying to bring out the best practices when they do it right, when it's part of their culture, they can repeatedly win big deals. And then the ones that maybe have just won one or two, they've got one or two banner accounts, how do they do that repeatedly? How do they really bring those components into their sales organization so they can replicate that year after year? And what I found, I actually interviewed 41 sales VPs as part of my research for this book, live interviews, one-on-one. And I asked them about their goals, about their challenges, about their proficiency with large account selling, and all the components. And what I learned was sales leaders today, they have twice as many challenges as they do goals. And that wasn't totally surprising to me, but when you really dig into it, it just shows how distracted they can be because they have so many challenges associated with their goals. But the other thing that I learned is most sales leaders don't have a playbook, a sales leadership playbook. They have a sales playbook for their salespeople to follow. And they want their salespeople to follow that playbook because they understand that if they do, they're going to be more successful, easier to manage, common terminology. You can measure it. But they don't have a sales playbook that would yield all the exact same benefits for the sales leadership team. And so through those 41 interviews, that really shaped my thinking on what this book should be. So it truly is a sales leader playbook. And I wrote the book in exactly the manner that those 41 people told me that they would find valuable.
This is interesting because now you're saying that the sales leader's playbook, trying to achieve the same goals, should look different from the sales team's playbook. Right?
Yes, 100%.
Yeah. So would you like to unpack that a bit? And can you use some examples to say how you sort of figured that and how does it look actually?
Yeah, absolutely. So a sales playbook for, you know, in most sales organizations looks like identifying, you know, what is the sales process? What's the buyer's journey that goes along with that process? What are the tools and the resources for those stages? What are some artifacts or you know, things that salespeople can use for each of those stages? That's a typical sales playbook. And most sales organizations have those, the ones that don't should. Absolutely proven that is a winning way to run your sales organization. Sales leadership playbook, and my playbook is geared around not just sales leadership in general, but how to really organize the sales leadership team to win these big deals is broken up into four parts. What sales leadership is needed, what methodology, in other words, the way we're going to go after these big opportunities, execution, how do you actually do the things that are important, and then culture. Does your company have a culture of winning big deals? And so specifics underneath, so the 16 plays fall under those four parts.
Right.
I'll give you an example. Yeah. Like sales culture, is the executive team, which is so much of your audience out there, it might be the CEO, the COO, the CFO, the CMO, are those people involved with the big deal process? And one of the whole one play is just dedicated to, you know, what does it look like when that's working?
Right.
You know, does your organization have a culture around, you know, win-loss retrospectives? So none of the plays are the same as you would find in a sales playbook. They're very different.
Got it. So most of us are into commoditized services, right? Which means
Yeah.
we have multiple competitors. Which
Yeah.
means that when a buyer is talking to us, it's most likely that the buyer is also talking to three or four of our competitors, right?
Absolutely.
It's very,
Yep.
very likely. Very likely. In a scenario like that, how do you actually identify these 5x deals, and how early do you think you should insert yourself into that process?
So, I mean, several of my plays, that's a great question, and several of my plays deal with that, but that kind of falls under the methodology. And,
okay.
you know, salespeople in general really don't like the word methodology. They don't like the word process.
Yeah, true.
So, but methodology, I couldn't find a better word for that part because it's like, how do we do it when you have this 5X? Because it doesn't fit with their normal sales playbook. And that does not mean that all the components of the normal sales playbook, the regular deal playbook, you're still using those. But now you're using a lot more. You have an account team that's been designated by the sales leader and enabled. That's
right.
One of the plays in the sales leadership section is designating and enabling the account quarterback. And then once you have this account team, they're going to march down this path. And it's probably going to start with scoring the opportunity.
Mm-hmm.
So in my book and the methodology, it goes through an extensive methodology with examples, samples, scoring being one of them, but scoring looking at a lot more than just the revenue potential. You know, looking at, is the account team committed to see this through? Maybe this might be 6 months, 9 months, 18 months.
Right.
You know, are they committed? I've worked with account teams. I worked with an account team recently, and we scored the opportunity and it scored very well, but it scored very low on the customer's willingness to go all the way through their buying journey and also access to the customer. But everything else scored high. So the account team said, you know what, we think there's enough here. We want to put the time and the resources. And so we spent the first 2 to 3 months of our war room strategy sessions literally trying to create emails that would just get a return call. And they had been doing this for 6 months prior to even engaging me. That's why they engaged me. It's like, we got to win one this year and we can't get it done on our own. So you know, at one point I'm like, wow, this is really fundamental. And the VP goes, Lisa, we're just trying to rub two sticks together here to get a flame. I'm like, okay, fine. Well, you know, and so we got it done. We got a response, and then we got a meeting, and then we got more meetings, and we kept having our war room work because every meeting was intense pre-call planning. We could not drop the ball. And in the background, we were doing things like, you know, SWOTs, and you mentioned the competitors. We were doing competitive analysis and blocking, both preemptive and if needed, defensive blocking as well. You know, all of that was being mapped out in the background as we were engaging the customer in the foreground. And one of the things about these 5X deals, sometimes you have to go backwards to go forwards. All of a sudden now there's a committee and we have to do a relationship map for each member of that committee. And we have to go back to our research and really understand the disposition of each of those people. And again, more pre-call planning. Well, 9 months later, after we were rubbing those two sticks together, they won that deal. And that was a game changer for their company for the year. They only need one per year, and that was their one. And now they still have that account. That's led them to another one.
Right.
So, you know, these and become a banner account for them. So these, it's worth the efforts when you win these, and they change the organization. So yes, lots of work around competitors, and that is absolutely part of the methodology. Pardon the use of that word for the salespeople listening today.
It's time for a short break. I asked Lisa how much of the playbooks and methodologies she writes about in the book is implementable without her hand-holding the reader. We will hear Lisa on how this book is meant to be a DIY manual as we get back from the break.
You are listening to a Business Podcast Network original. Podcasting is the fastest growing content marketing opportunity, which is untapped. We can help you craft your audio strategy and help leverage the wide reach and easy streaming capability that the smartphone penetration provides. It is easy, it is powerful and personal. Talk to us to find out how podcasting can help you build your brand and reach out to your targets like never before. Write to us at bpn@bizcast.in. That is bpn@bizcast.in. Business Podcast Network. Podcasts end to end.
Welcome back. As we went into the break, I asked Lisa if readers can actually put her advice into practice without her intervening. This is what she told me.
So how much will somebody reading the book be able to execute without Lisa around?
That's a great question because, you know, I love to be involved with my clients and with their deals, and I, you know, get as much gratification, I think, as they do when we go through this process and we win these deals and I see them, and I have a 95% return client rate. So then I get to work with them again and again and,
of course,
and stuff. But anybody can look at this playbook and make it their playbook. So it's each of the plays have, you know, what is the play? What are the steps? One of the VPs that I interviewed said, as I was, you know, kind of mapping out what the chapters were going to be and the section, the parts and the plays, and she said to me, Lisa, are you going to have yellow and red flags? And I'm like, well, now I am, because that's the best idea I ever heard. So each of the plays, you know, what is it? What are the steps? What are the yellow flags when it's not working? What are the red flags when it's really now not working? And what remedies can you put in place? And then there's tons of models and examples. So like scoring, you know, there's an example of a scorecard in there, relationship mapping, example of a relationship map. It's all in there. And every single one of the 16 plays has a sideline coach. So I literally searched the world for experts on each of the plays, and they lend their expertise to that play. So I've got 16 people from all over the globe. No one from India.
We're not very good at selling.
No, I'm sure that is not true. But I've got the UK, I've got Singapore, I've got all over the world. And the U.S., of course. But and these people weigh in with their expertise. You know, it might be three or four paragraphs. This is a playbook. It's very easy to read. So they weigh in with a different perspective to add value to the play. So to answer your question, yes, somebody can read this book and they can absolutely have everything they need to go, how do we implement this in our organization? And I also will facilitate book clubs for folks. I've got an offer out there now around a book club offer. I also built templates. This is one of the things the VP said they wanted, that people can purchase on my website. So it's sort of a blank version of the playbook, and they can buy that. You can use that, get their team together. Maybe while they're reading the book, they're building their own version of the playbook. So lots of ways that people can, you know, really embrace these concepts and make them work for their organization.
Wonderful. I was part of a webinar a couple of days back, and that webinar was talking about the buyer's journey. In fact, it was called "Who Moved My Buyer?" to the context that the buyer is not buying the same way today as they were buying, say, 10 years back, and that process is quite different from the way we try to define it from the sales perspective. It's sort of an independent thing. And the point that came out was that one of the biggest disappointments buyers have is after the sale closes, in the quality of the delivery that happens and the transition from the salesperson to the delivery team and so on. So is this something that you think is critical for an organization to sustain a 5X sales culture?
Yes, yes. As a matter of fact, one of the parts in the methodology talks about expansion and expansion opportunities. And Barbara Weaver Smith is my expert. She's the author of The Whale Hunters, yeah. A very close colleague of mine. We've worked together for many years. She's the expert that talks about that transition and the pros and cons of different ways that companies make that transition. You know, some companies have the lead salesperson, maybe it's the account executive or the global account executive or the national account executive, and then there's a handoff to an account manager. And so she talks about the pros and cons associated with that versus having the account executive keep the account and the pros and cons associated with that, and offers sort of some really good thinking on maybe a hybrid version of that. But with these big accounts, you cannot win and sustain these 5X deals repeatedly without a rock solid way to make sure these clients are not only happy, that they need to be your best referrals, you need to be able to talk about them and do more business with them, expand them. So a lot of the work, the strategy work, it doesn't end when the contract gets signed at all. It continues on, it refreshes. I'll give you a short story. I was working with another client. This is my biggest win actually. With one of my clients. And I've had some really big ones, but this is my biggest. I was working with this company, and they get big deals. It's kind of just based on, you know, what they sell. And we found out about this opportunity, and we were not poised to win it. It was not an existing customer; it was a new prospect. They had some negative perceptions of my client. They already were working with somebody they liked. And there were some geographical challenges, but we scored them. And kind of like the other example that I gave, it's like, you know what? We think there's enough here. We're going to put the resources. We're going to make the commitment. We're going to march forward. So we did. Similar to the other situation, tons of account strategy, especially competitive because they had that current provider that they really liked. So We had to overcome those challenges. We had to really, you know, do a better job than the competitor, went all the way through, orchestrated every single interaction, and they won that deal, $40 million. Wow. $40 million. So that was my biggest. I've done 30, I've done 20, 40, biggest. So satisfying, you know, celebrations, whatever. But to your point, within 90 days, they did, because we didn't stop with our planning on winning the deal. It went through implementation. We were thinking about implementation way early in the process, because in order to overcome the geographical challenges and to unseat that competitor, we had to really paint the picture of what the implementation was going to look like. So we hit that so hard. Well, they did a great job implementing. Within 90 days, they had a referral for another brand new prospect like the one they had just landed, and now they're working on that. Crazy. Absolutely. $40 million plus next one.
Yeah.
So you're exactly right. It's, you have to think about those things. You have to put the resources, and that is part of a solid strategy.
Wonderful. Wonderful. So I would, you know, I don't want you to give away the book, obviously, in the sense in this podcast. But can you identify a few red flags that you have cautioned people while they're building their playbooks, whether for the leadership or for the sales methodology or for the culture? What kind of red flags have you sort of pointed to, which people really need to look out for?
Yeah, I mean, at a high level, some of the red flags are, you know, the sales VP not being fully committed. It you know, saying, hey, we're going to do this thing, and it becomes kind of a flavor of the month. Mm-hmm. Again, at a high level, when you're thinking about culture, the executive team is not backing up the sales leader to go after these, you know, to create a culture around going after big deals. Because let's talk about this very specific. So what would that look like? If the executive team wasn't committed, it would look like them just pummeling the sales leader and the sales organization for 30-day regular deals, instead of understanding that, I mean, sure, you need to continue with your business, you know, your normal business. That engine's got to be running. But if you want to add this 5X deal component, you want to do that repeatedly, sometimes that almost always that takes a different approach. Brian Burns, who's somewhat famous podcaster out of San Francisco, he's one of my experts, and he comments on, you know, sometimes companies' leaders have to do things they don't want to do. Maybe they have to get outside of the fiscal year and say, we're going to protect commissions, territories, account assignments outside of that for these big deals. Or, you know, our normal process might be a 30-day evaluation. For these big deals, that might need to be a 6-month, 9-month, you know, and the executive team has to back that up, or we have to make some investments that we don't normally make, and the executive team has to back that up. So a red flag is, you know, where you don't have the culture, which means the executive team isn't on board with doing the things that are absolutely required to go after these big deals, to maintain these accounts, like you pointed out earlier, and to get new ones. And those are some of the high level big flags. Lower level, the account team, it's hard to stay with something over time. It's really hard. So you can have dysfunctionality, which can be a yellow flag that can turn into a red flag. You know, people, it's like all of a sudden aren't showing up for the strategy meetings because they get bored. So there's all, I would say for each of those plays, the yellow and red flags, there's at least 5 yellow flags and red flags for every play.
Right.
Literally, it's this minefield or this battlefield that's just fraught with landmines.
Got it. As I said, I mean, we are all in a commodities business, all of us.
Yes. Yes.
So how effectively can you forecast? Because, I mean, if I read the literature and the research, people are missing forecast by miles.
Yes, you know, just with their normal business.
Yeah, yeah. So how do you, from your vantage point and your vast experience, how do you see we are sort of getting this whole forecasting thing wrong? And how can we fix it?
So, you know, in my world, the big deal world, you know, I have to say that I don't spend a lot of time on forecasting. It's, you know, it's my clients would be doing that, but we don't spend much time talking about that. And, you know, it's part of that culture to understand when you have these big deals, they take a long time. There's lots of people involved. Sometimes you have to back up to go forward. Sometimes there are stalls and stops that you don't want to see in your normal sales process, but you will see them in this big deal sales process. You just will. Committees get disbanded, have to be reformed. Executive sponsors move on. New executive sponsor comes forward. A lot can happen over months, you know, during this sales process. So I think the reason why I don't spend a lot of time here with my clients is they have to manage that internally. And certainly in terms of forecasting, you know, these deals probably aren't forecasted until they're very close to being done. You know, it's you have that agreement, you understand the procurement process, the customer maybe has already said yes, and maybe that's when they get forecasted. But I have to say, I'm not an expert on that, because that's, you know, my time with my clients is helping them to get to that point. Sometimes when you get to a yes, it's another 3 months.
Right.
So if I was advising them on that, and I don't, and I'm not an expert on their forecasting process, I would say don't forecast these deals till you have an agreement from the customer. And then it's there, you know, you still have to know a lot about their environment to know, you know, what month that contract is going to get signed.
Fair enough. I mean, actually, I was coming more from your not with context to the book, but from what you have seen, and the
yes.
fact that we get so much of the forecasting wrong.
Yes.
What do you think, if you step back and look at it, where do you think we are going wrong? I mean, that was the core question.
Yes.
Not so much with the book per se.
No, I understand, and I wasn't even speaking to the book, but more right. speaking to my practical experience. But right. here is one thing that I will tell you that I do talk to teams about, is every time you have a strategy session, every time you do pre-call planning, every time you map out the strategy, every time you refresh the relationship chart, every time that you really dial in your win themes, you are improving your likelihood of success. You are increasing that percentage. And that is something we talk about all the time, because that is absolutely true. So people don't stumble on big deals. They don't at least in my 30 plus year experience, you know, they don't just come in and then you don't just get them.
you
have to have... Yeah, that would be nice. But instead, you have to methodically, hence the methodology section of the book, methodically do all the things to keep increasing your likelihood of success. And the reason that's so inspiring to account teams is because they're like, okay, we're going to put this time into me, and today we're going to work on win themes. It's like, that's going to improve our likelihood of success. We just gained 10%, you know? Next meeting, we're going to gain another 10%. And so eventually that adds up to, you know, higher close rates, which is very exciting to management teams and specifically sales leadership teams.
Of course. So finally, what would you say would be the core thrust for some organization which is looking at a 5X deal? If you want to say that, okay, as an organization, you have to focus on one thing to build yourself towards a 5X culture, towards a 5X sales organization, this is one thing you must do.
That's a great question. And so if you want to think about the one thing, to me, it's the account strategies. I call them war rooms. Sometimes, depending on where we are in the world, popular, yeah. not popular, but that's kind of,
right.
I've been doing that for years and years and years, so hard to come off of that. But the one thing is those account strategy, because it has a multiplier effect. So, you know, if the book has 16 plays, and that's one of them, you know, implementing your war room strategy, but if it has 16 plays, if you do the one, you make progress on so many of the others.
Right.
And so what does that look like? I mean, one of the things I have in the book is a sales leadership 12-month calendar with activities that you would want to see happening over a long period of time. So if you have those account strategies and they are every month for the whole year and the next year and the next year, you're going to figure out, you know, what that methodology is. You're going to do the pre-call planning, the account quarterback or coordinator. I was talking to somebody and from England, he goes, can you explain quarterback? We don't have football here. Or football's different here than I go, you know, that focal point.
Yeah.
You know, all those other things get figured out if you just commit to these accounts. What also gets figured out is the ones that aren't worth the time, you know. Yeah. So maybe you don't exactly use scoring. You should, but maybe you don't, which is, you will figure it out just by putting that stake in the ground around the account strategy sessions.
Right.
So that's my one thing. That's my trust.
Bits About Books is brought to you by PitchLink, the buyer-seller engagement platform. PitchLink makes buying easy by enabling high-quality engagement between buyers and sellers through its presentation and discussion modules. Sellers create customized sales narratives using sales collaterals and personal videos and reach out to prospects through a non-intrusive, buyer-qualified engagement. PitchLink requires no installation or download and holds the entire repository of sales collaterals and buyer-seller conversations. Talk to us to know more about how you can engage with customers without intrusion. Call us on 99021-631-32.
Wonderful, wonderful. Thank you, Lisa. I really enjoyed chatting with you. And
Thank you.
I look forward to talking to you again when your next book is out.
Thank you.
Coming up in the next episode is a surprising conversation with Dr. Benjamin Hardy on his latest book, Personality Isn't Permanent.
When I did my PhD in organizational psychology, one of the things that I learned how to do as a scientist was learned how tests are properly developed. You know, you can't actually measure and study something without testing it. And there's a lot of rigorousness as far as what makes something a good test. And, you know, your test has to be valid, meaning that it's actually studying what it says it's studying. It has to be science-based. It has to be reliable, meaning that it gets the same score over and over and over again. All of my professors told me over and over again that tests like Myers and Briggs and Enneagram, these kind of popular personality tests, are really junk science. And obviously it's a $2 billion industry. And so I wanted to understand, why is this junk science and what happens to people when they take these tests seriously? And it's really damaging. You know, I mean, it really leads people to a fixed mindset. It leads them to being limited in how they see themselves, and it ultimately leads them to a mediocre life. And so I wanted to explain the negative impacts of taking these tests seriously, and then explain how personality can be shaped and developed by yourself. You know, these are a very fast food way to kind of understand who a person is, or to think you understand who a person is. You know, you get a snapshot. And personality does not predict performance. Personality is not a good measure for hiring people.
We have a fantastic lineup over the next couple of weeks with great conversations with Cash Nickerson, Carl Gold, and Juan David Campolargo. Juan, by the way, is the youngest author yet on my show. His book is Anything But.
Thank you for being with us today on Bits About Books, where we talk to authors about breakthrough books on sales, marketing, and business. We hope this conversation helped inform and motivate as we all navigate a rapidly changing business environment. For us, these are enlightening conversations enriched with knowledge and expertise. We encourage you to go out and buy the book to learn firsthand and implement some of the great ideas we discussed today. We hope to have you with us again in the next exciting episode of Bits About Books. If you liked what you heard, subscribe to the show in your favorite podcast platforms like iTunes, Google Play, Spotify, or wherever else you get your podcast from, and give us a rating while you are at it.
This BizCast original podcast is produced for PitchLink, the next generation buyer-seller engagement platform, where the mission is to make buying easy. Hosted by Subhanjan Sarkar and produced by Rajiv Aditya. See you next time and have a wonderful day.